Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, November 27th, 2012, and this is hour 168 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and returned to Maui with their amazing flowing dialogue, and now we hear from Sharon using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. I'm glad we have electricity. It went off a couple times this morning, and it's been snowing all morning, and it looks like it just stopped. So things are good. It's always good when we have electricity.
Well, that's great. Yeah, I don't know about snow. We don't experience that here too often.
Yeah, up on Haleakala you get snow.
Yeah, but then it's never really the same. Yeah, it's, you know, the different kinds of snowfall. Up there it's just really not very much fun usually when it's snowing, because it's because the jet stream drops down a little bit lower. And then you get snow. It's more like windy, and the snow can be kind of coarse or wet. You know, not that light stuff that just sort of floats down.
Yes, it floats down, and then when the flakes get real big, that comes down real slow.
Yeah,
It is. It does make the place look beautiful here. It just changes everything. It's nature, and it's wonderful. But, well, welcome back, and we can Ted sent an email to you and I, and I can read the beginning of it. There's five paragraphs. You read that, Michael?
Yeah, that's basically about how the correcting time works. But it's really overcoming the Lucifer Rebellion and many of the legacies left embedded in our culture, even some of it being influenced by even our nature, who we are as human beings, because we weren't left alone and to progress and to essentially follow the pure Adamic line of intervention. There were others involved. And that's left embedded in even our folklore, legends of the gods, even the Hawaiian legends follow very closely about the ancient gods and how they interbred with humans to, you know, leave a genetic legacy. So that's embedded in us. And more and more, we can see a dividing line between, human and those who follow a more divine pull, which is really the ultimate purpose of life on the planet, and especially human life. But others followed more more selfish form of living life, and that was, you know, almost destroyed. But at the intervention and the bestowal of Christ Michael, when he came, he really did bring forward tools that have laid embedded in our society, functional and moving, especially with the offering forth of to every soul the divinity fractal, the thought adjuster, and the igniting force of the thought adjuster, which is his character, the nature, and I've gotta go somewhere. Can you pause it for a
second?
Sure,
I'll pause.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I just started this recording again. I should have read what Ted wrote, and I can post on the listen page what this is. He said, Curtis and Michael, I received a bulletin yesterday from the 1111 group. Not sure you are subscribed, so sending for your info. I'd be very interested in hearing what Michael and Sharon had to say about the message of Manjurinsen in particular. I've looked through the Manjurinsen site and find it vague and confusing, as it seems to be channeled through a number of people, not nearly as precise and clear as and Michael's words. Here's the message. And it's about five paragraphs long. And all right, Michael, I'm sorry, you could pick it up from there.
Well, the important thing is this is a tremendous project that is being undertaken, and it really has diverted from the normal character of developing a planet, and especially a planet that suffered under rebellion, in particular, Lucifer rebellion. But in this engagement imposed onto our planet, were initially the Shoduns. The Shoduns were very old. They came in, they prepared the planet. Melchizedek came forward, choosing a particular group of people, and that was the Israelites. And it was not the best or the worst. It was the closest that it could find the true interaction between the divinity that was to be reinvigorated into the human progress of divinity attainment. And that required the Trinity concept. The Trinity concept is very important because remember the time we decoded the Saturn rings, Curtis?
Yes, there was the sound,
the alien voice, the alien recording.
Yes, I did.
And it was decoded. It was actually in English, and it said something like, "These three are God for you," and it went rip 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 at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And the Trinity concept basically comes down to the fact that it's more than a concept; it's a reality of what the universe really is. And the universe that we are involved in, and really comes down to its local universe, follows a pattern of the greater universe. But it amounts to Father, Son, and Spirit. And if you look at that, you have one nature, Father, Son, and Spirit. But then of this one nature, Father, Son, and Spirit, you have the Father uniquely, you have the Son uniquely, and the Spirit. This accumulates in four distinct characteristics. Then you move from the Father to the Son as another characteristic, and the Son to the Spirit as another characteristic, and finally the Father to the Spirit. Now, the important thing was when Christ came, he came not to do his own thing, even as the Creator Son, but to come to fulfill the will of the Father who sent him. And in such modality, he gave forth the thought of justice freely to all humanity. This would be one of the most important factors in causing us to rise above the Lucifer rebellion in stealing essentially our soul and destiny. So he came to do the will of the Father. But implanted in the relational characteristic became his personal experience as a human being. which was very important, in which he attained all of our humanity, our base nature, as well as being fully divine and fully, I mean, God, essentially. And then he also experientially placed that within the nature of the spirit. So the spirit bears the sun and identifies with the sun. So essentially it's a gateway. The spirit is the spirit nature. So the divine fractal remains, and the spirit, the Holy Spirit remains, the spirit of service, and the nature of Christ remains. So we come to know the Son, the divinity Son, or the Creator Son, or Jesus Christ, because of this intimate relationship that is built in all seven. Now, these seven bore witness of the Trinity and their natures, their combined natures, coming forth as these seven divine spiritual characteristics have been embedded in the Jewish menorah, the candles. And what happened when he left not only these tools, the divinity fractal, the thought adjuster, which is really pre-personal. It doesn't have the nature. So the nature of God is born in the Holy Spirit, because that is embedded in it is the relationship of Jesus Christ, earthly or mortal bestowal, and he embedded that. And that those relationships, if you get close in those relationships, we start attaining divinity and truly becoming divine. But along with these divinity functionalities, you know, we become more and more divine. We get certain enforcements. We become enforced with different types of gifts, you might say. And these gifts were given out way back then, and were classified into seven groups or seven distinct workings. And the Apostle Paul enumerated on them and tried to bring some clarity, because they were just in its initial installment in human in the first century, the human race in the first century. People were just not realizing that there was a wholeness of it all, that some participated in only one part of these gifts. And they start off with basically coming with more philosophic as well as intellectual areas. And these would be classified as a spirit of wisdom, and another a spirit of knowledge, knowledge being subliminally character given, complete ideas. And many of those function in a human race to help elevate us in our inventiveness. Another is a kind of very special faith, belief, absolute, indisputable. And this is essentially a gift by which many leaps in organizing humanity together, or even getting angelic help, functions. And moving from there, there's also in that angelic functions as well as direct connection with empowerment that comes from that same spirit are healings, miraculous healings, all kinds. And some that you can literally hear I've done some that have, you could hear it goes click, and the, you know, the guy was, you know, complaining about, you know, back pains, and just touch them and they go crock and it corrects something. And you didn't do, you know, I know I didn't do anything like a chiropractor would have done, but just touch. And these kinds of things are function even at the mechanical level, but also at a more complex level, it would be considered, you know, the medical term would be spontaneous recovery. And that would be from many different kinds of diseases, cancer being one of them. And from there, there's also other energies and powers at work by this relationship that comes through this connection. And that would be miraculous powers, powers like turning natural events into, like, turning a hurricane is a good example, or getting a bubble of protection about you as the hurricane moves. And you've experienced that, yeah, Curtis?
Yeah, I sure have. My gosh.
Yeah. You can't say, I went out there and constructed this miraculous bubble.
No,
yet
I didn't do it.
It did happen, and it happened because of this maturity in divinity attainment. And another is prophecy, or looking into the future, as well as speaking out truth. So as you move truth, prophecy, just speaking truth, you can also speak truth that transcends time. It can actually go forward in time, and you can speak about truth or an event, or you can see it. And then, of course, is the tongues or the different languages that can be codified. Many of the languages that we speak today are understood, but if you have a codified language that is directed, it will be decoded on the other end. And that would be different kinds of languages, as well as some people have actually never spoke the language and found that those that understood that their language, their gifted language, was an earthly language, and they actually began to speak in terms of moving prophecy forward or truth forward. All these function under the interaction between spiritual reality, the spiritual realities, the spirit, and the spiritual energy, which is much more than energy, character, nature, working with the divine fractal. So you have the sun, nature embedded in the spirit, working with the father fractal within the individual, which brings the person into the center of the seven psychic circles, circle one, you might call. But in the initial stages, when you reach at about the fourth circle from the center, you will be challenged. There is an extreme level of challenge that goes into this dark pit of giving up yourself, dying to oneself. This is a hard place to be, and everyone who enters into the central circle has already died to themselves. Death to one's self-identity, their ego, is required. And that can be, for some, very difficult, and for others, not quite as difficult. It has a lot to do with how much you love God. If you love God a lot, you will gain a lot. It'll be easier to die to yourself and attain the inner three until you gain the one. And sometimes you will be guided to actually be to receive a type of cutting away. One of the things I noticed about, you know, working with a diamond, I was surprised to find out that natural diamonds are diamond-shaped, but they don't glisten and they're not quite so beautiful until they get cut by, you know, someone who's well-trained in cutting them, faceting them, so the light penetrates. I remember looking at going to Washington, D.C. and seeing the Hope Diamond. Wow, you know, that's a nice-looking stone. But it required removing a lot of stuff. So sometimes by the hand of an angelic guide, you might say, helps carve your character and personality so that you might attain more efficiently the inner gifts of being involved in the inner circles of divinity attainment. Once attaining the first, your will, the Father's will, are essentially one. That is the greatest characteristic, and that was demonstrated even by Christ himself, where he said, "Nevertheless, not my will, but thy will be done." And he ascended the cross willingly and gave his life. You don't take my life, I give it willingly. This is the same concept that was attained many times by any of those early Christians, and it still remains embedded in all who want to attain the first circle. So it's the seed was the concept of a seed was often used, is that it, you know, if you have a seed and it retains its shape as a seed, then you will not have a plant. But if it falls to the ground and then it dies, it falls away, and that part that is necessarily falls to fall away brings forth the life, and then you have the new plant. It must fall to the ground and die. And if it doesn't die, it just is alone. This is another concept of moving into the divinity nature, the divine nature. As we participate in a divine nature, there are dangers also. Because not only do we bless within when we attain more and more of these divinity, but there can be dangers in which we can curse. By cursing, that means things can move in the wrong direction for others. So it also is a command that he said, bless and curse not. So just in case people wonder if you have the ability to work miracles, and they may end up becoming kind of a negative thing. You got to watch that.
Because Andrea asked if I could ask you to please elaborate on the first psychic circle.
Yes.
The centermost circle, the paradise circle.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So that is what I'm describing right now.
Yes.
The inner three. So. Yeah. So that she would get her message through. There's another thing that was interesting is that this morning I received an image of teaching from, let's say, can you imagine a classroom? And on the classroom environment, there'll be like a little stage. And standing on the stage would be a teacher, supposedly a teacher, that is got a, you know, like a roll about blackboard.
Mm-hmm.
And in writing on one side of the blackboard, is a human being, and on the other side where you cannot see this blackboard, there is this being, which was shown to me as a familiar sight to me, which is like a gray alien, and guiding this hand, this teacher's hand on the other side. And the teaching that's coming forth is coming forth through the teacher, somewhat subliminally. That term subliminal was used by, what was his name? Angels.
Oh, something. Tom Angels?
Tom Angels, yeah. He used the word subliminal too many times. Subliminal means with be under our conscious awareness.
Mm-hmm.
But there are teachers, there will be teachers who will be teaching things under conscious awareness, but they will be guided by essentially perfect beings. And it's not something that is so impossible, because I have to declare that I was declared perfect by the Dano, and perfect for what tool? For this type of tool, to be able to relate truth, not from my own source, but from the basically from the first source and center. And that is how more and more truth will be sent into the world. And it will be done through a lot through human beings who have gained a connection to divinity. And divinity truth. So that will be coming forth.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I had asked Michael to read or to listen to Tom Angels. I just started recording with Tom Angels last week on Thursday, and we did an hour introduction to who he was and or who he is. He died in 1992 and he came back, and what he has to say is really interesting, and I asked Michael to listen. So that's who Michael was referring to, Tom Angels. You can see it on the homepage of helloearth.info.
Yes.
And be able to listen.
And Tom Angels has a higher divinity attainment already. But it's our same for every human being. That is our inheritance. And we can live that level of reality until it becomes part of us. And what my purpose is as navigator is to help everyone attain that, because it becomes a part of you. So you just operate that way. And when operating in that mode, it's just part of who you are, and you just end up being able to function that way. So the extensions of, as I gave in the opening, are meant for everyone. But not everyone will function exactly the same with all diversity, with the full diversity of seven different expressions of divinity. Some may only work with just one. Others may work with more than one. Or some, like myself, will work with all of them. And depending upon the purpose. And for me, the purpose is to help guide every individual to fulfill their role in divinity attainment while in the body. Because when you do divinity attainment in the body, you are truly working out eternity and divinity and an ascended character above even those that are within a realm of perfection. And that is to overcome evil, to overcome imperfection, and to send where there is chaos, truth. This is the high call of being immortal, and not to be essentially a slave to mortality, but to bring divinity into mortality. And this is where light and life begins, because as more and more light bringers come forth, the light will be increasingly bright, and shadow will disappear. Interestingly, there was no shadow really in the New Jerusalem because of the way light works over there. There's just no source of light. It's just there at various levels. So, yeah.
I don't think I ever heard you say that before.
Well, that's this character of just having light. Where's the light coming from, you know? Little questions like that. Mm-hmm. But that's, being with material beings as well as spiritual beings of very high order too. They're all mixed in the same place. And it's supposed to be that way here too, but we don't recognize a lot of times. And there is evil here, which is a remnant of the Lucifer rebellion, and which is an ability to choose. And even in choosing liberty, freedom, that can be evil. So therefore, we've got to be truly careful, because when Christ said, "Nevertheless, not my will, but thy will be done," it all comes down to the first source and center and getting aligned to divinity, more than divinity, to the first source and center and the will of the first source and center. And then actually becoming the will of the first source and center as we in our own selves express our own ability to do and express in our own way. And it is a way of really being able to live eternally. Yeah, because everybody knows that the idea of been there and done that. And we always want a new experience, we want a new realm, we want a new dimension added to our lives. And when you have the first source and center as your character, there's no end. There's just no end to new experience, new domains, new expression. It just moves beyond that, and timelessness also. So this is something that you'll be attaining. But at the cusp of attaining all of these things I'm talking about can be a severe trial, one form or another. It for most people, it won't require a physical death. But a lot of times, a physical death and coming back from a physical death helps a whole lot in attaining that. But you don't need to do that.
Well, is that a good thing? Not to have a physical death to attain that?
Oh, yes. It's a higher order experience, because what it means is he chose to become divine. And that is much different than just by accident, you might say, or by happenstance, by serendipity or something, getting that way. You know, it is much better that we, by our own will, choose. Because in that way, our choice becomes truly divine. And then we will have more and more ability to express divine will and our will in the same breath, as you might say. Not so much as it's been distorted at one time by the structures of powerful religious groups, which through some high order leader dictates the manner in which things should be done, and mindlessly people must follow such dictates. This is exactly opposite of what should be happening, where people are truly liberated, not under the flag of the liberty of confusion and darkness, but under the flag of the first source and center's brilliant light and exposing all truth. So that kind of liberty really makes it's much better to have vision than to go about stumbling around in life being blind. And this is where I and my purpose is, to bring forth as simple as I can that truth, so that whether we explore life in terms of expressing science and things like that, or going beyond that, to philosophies and seeing, or just struggling with the human will, and even in the political realm, a lot of changes will begin to happen, because you'll receive more and more insight into divinity, and it'll be expressed throughout the planet.
Well, that's beautiful. That really is.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no end to living eternally?
No, it is a wonderful expansionary universe, continually expanding, yet needing divine souls, divine people who can transcend. There's higher dimensional realities, but we at the base level is actually quite sophisticated in terms of its mechanics and the development, because it was called into existence and holds itself real. And even when you look at the modern physicists today, they have come to a point where they actually realize, when they looked at the God particle, this idea of the God particle having parallels with the Urantia books, term for the automaton, both having certain characteristics, but most importantly, the characteristic of the automaton, as well as the concept of the God particle, having to be called from another field or a place, not a something to call it into existence. And this is the predicament of our present science, realizing that where is this field that calls into existence all that is real, and the totality, expression of all reality is held in the first source and center. And hopefully I've come to explain our position in it and our actually destiny purpose, so that our expression in our present relatively short lives here is to develop a certain kind of unique personality of who we are, and be able to move that well beyond becoming, just rubber stamp individuals that are just like each other. But that's exactly why we're mortal. We develop uniqueness, and that is an expression of God's creative mobility in why He created us, essentially.
So we all can be totally unique, develop
yes.
Uniqueness,
unique character. It's an interesting thing that even when we look toward absolute perfection, when there are individuals who come here and look at our planet's supposed confusion, they also come away with a bit of awe in terms of our ability to want to be individual, you know, not just a part of the whole, not a hive mind or something like that, but to be part of the whole, but yet an individual. This is an expression of divinity expressed in many. Many little gods all learning how to be a little god. This is one of the things that Christ was crucified for. And his expression to them was, you know, don't you know it's written that we are all gods? And, you know, this is where that purpose of human life was sort of pushed down. Now, what do they call us? And it's breaking down pretty quickly, in the, you know, as consumers, you know. We're not consumers. We start here and move toward divinity attainment.
When you say we start here, mm-hmm. do you mean at birth or at the age we're at now?
We start really to attain uniqueness in our mortal structure. It is a scaffolding where we build the eternal soul. An eternal soul having the potential of actual divine, becoming literally a glorified soul or a fused soul. We're fusing with divinity or the divine fractal or the thought adjuster, as the Yerancha book calls it. So we truly become much more than we are. But we attain it through the paradox of serving our physical needs and being sort of enslaved in terms of our mortality, yet at the same time being liberated in terms of a spirituality to attain both characters wholly in one, and as a result becoming a very unique individual and free-willed.
Mm-hmm. Well, how about the Dorians? They're not, they don't appear to be unique. They all appear, as you said, to be somewhat the same.
Their physical bodies apparently were some kind of construct. Cloning, perhaps, maybe not. But they were, the hint was that there was a youngster who introduced them at the beginning, as they all walked past me. And finally, there was this little one at the end, and he came up and said, "Hi, we're the Dorians." It's so cute, you know, the little one. And I said, "You child, like a child growing up." But, you know, you could see that he was going to end up looking just like him when he got big. Mm-hmm. But so apparently there's a type of growth process that goes on, much similar to what, you know, we have. But I'm kind of wondering, do they have navels? I didn't get, they had, you know, you couldn't see that part. But, you know, actually, really don't know. They were all looking alike. But when I got to talk to them, they all had unique personalities.
Oh, that's interesting that they all had that they were all so different.
Well, their like personality, I could tell them apart by just, you know, their tone, their voice, the way they structured their words were a little bit different. One was very direct, the other one abrupt. you know, the other one that I was talking to, and I could differentiate between the two, was trying to bring more understanding to me. So when I looked at them, the Dorians, you know, I said, I looked over to my guide, and you know, you've got the picture of how my graduate guide looked like, right? And when how come they're all girls? And they heard me say that, and they, one guy came over, it's more abrupt, they came over and said, "We're not girls." And I said, "Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you were a man." And he says, "We're not that either." And I look, and I stopped, and I paused, and I looked at him, and the other guy came across. And I said, "Well, maybe you're, you know, maybe you're a Hummerfordite or something." And he says, "We're not that either." And I said, "You mean you are without sex?" Or, you know, he says, "Yes." And how could that be? And he says, "It is the way we chose, but there are shortcomings because they lost their that ability in their whatever it was in their choosing to supposedly create a perfect race of being, and it ended up becoming as if they were just a clone of each other. Maybe that was the only way they could reproduce. But they were in the same class with me, so I guess they weren't so highly evolved either."
They were in the same class with you? I thought they were just walking by when you were there.
Well, they were also in the class. I'm talking about, yeah. They were just walking by. Then I met them in the classroom environment where I was led into, which had that tree outside, that Morancha plant, the one that would be like how Moses described, or it was described in the Bible as a bush that burned and it wasn't consumed. Mm-hmm. So actually, I mean, for a primitive mind, that would be one of the ways to describe it. But inside of the room was the big guys, the 8 or 9 foot guys. They would be like the Sumerians would have drawn the Anunnaki, you know. They were in there as long, and also gray type would be considered, you know, the skinny guys with the round heads, big eyes. They were in there too, as well as the teacher, the Dano, who looked like about 29, 30 years old, young guy, clean cut, short hair, and he's the one that said he was a Dano, a teacher. I got him mixed up with Daniel. I said, "You're Daniel?" "Well, the prophet Daniel?" I said, "A Dano, I am a teacher." And he just would explain the 7 psychic circles and things like that. Much more. I actually was found, he's the one that declared me perfect, in fact, so that I was able to go to the secret place, you might say, of the Most High. Was taken to step into the light with Dano, and we were transmigrated, or whatever it was, into that domain where I was able to ask the primary question that I had, which is, what is the purpose of life, human life, and all life? And that's where I received the answer that it is to bring from you to us, to become like as we are. And these were the 2 Virandadik, Most High observers. They actually are really high up there in terms of being vested with authority and power, and will soon be superseded by, of course, the second coming of Jesus Christ, but that's unknown yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems they taught you a lot in a short period of time, or they have been teaching you all along, even though you were only up there for a certain period of time.
Yes. One of the important things is that if you go back, and I go back to this list of gifts of the Spirit, and they started off with wisdom and knowledge. Both wisdom and knowledge are the subliminal learning that takes place. It's not really learning, it just happens. And when we learn things, we go through different modalities, you know. You get rote learning where you can, you know, memorize how to write the letter A, B, C, D, or whatever, and we go through it and we write them down a number of times. And in terms of how they would, the spirit, spiritually embed it would be more like learning the entire alphabet in a twinkling of an eye. It's instantaneously happen, and you just know all of that and can actually use it. But it is not as common as experiential learning. And that is where we learn how to choose correctly. Because being free-willed, we have to learn to choose correctly. Yeah.
Is that by the process of elimination or learning the hard way?
Well, initially, we do learn by a composite of both things. Mm-hmm. But to learn divinity is to engage in the pre-knowledge of the will and then to choose in having this pre-knowledge of what the will is to accomplish it in your everyday life. And that would require many times being able to see through the situation and see it really for what it is. You know, a big mistake would be like people would go into their lives and say, well, the purpose of my life is to get rich so that I have to do all this stuff, you know, that I work hard. Or really, when they do that, they did not see their real purpose and will, the divine will. It was hidden. And as a result, they build an immensely complicated structure of living that has no usefulness in the divine realm. Instead, it would be much closer if we were to look for ways in which would bring the divine into our realm. And in so doing, whether it be through science or practical skills of being implanted with knowledge and wisdom in engineering and, you know, bringing society up, even in reconstructing an entire financial system, these are all part of the mind and becoming united with the mind of God, or the first source and center, which all the universe is built about, and all of it is structured upon, except the areas which rebelled. And we are still suffering from the legacy of many of the constructs of the rebellion. The selfishness, the concept of beings, you know, one human being, one group of human beings being more important than another group of human beings, or superior to, when all of the human race has been given this opportunity to ascend. And what the ascension could mean in one would be looking over another person's, another culture and saying, oh, they're more primitive. And another culture turning right back and saying, you got more problems than we do because you want to do that. See, now you're stuck in that rut. Now, I may be primitive, but I'm happy. So that kind of stuff. Yeah. And we're stuck with all of these problems. But if you have that innate contact with first source and center and purpose, it helps give you vision of greater light to our lives.
Well, the people on Earth are mostly creative. They just are held back, it seems, quite a bit. They're held back by all the problems of Earth, all the problems we have just surviving.
Yeah, because the present paradigm has to come to an end, and it will be. And in this coming age, there'll be a tremendous amount of intervention, but not necessarily direct intervention. As I said, what was given to me this morning was the concept of a teacher actually just being led to teach something from the more experienced guides and guardians on how to do things.
So you mentioned, could you say that again about the little gods and trying to be a god?
Yeah, well, what happened was initially the concept of God or being a high order being was declared as impossible or something you cannot be because you're mortal. Mm-hmm. But they came to Jesus Christ and say, you know, you claim to be the Son of God. And Christ said, you have said it to me, you know. But don't you know it is already written that it is declared that we, the human beings on this planet, are gods that, you know, need to complete their ascension. So what gods meant was to be able to freely help create the universe, being the little g gods, not the big G, first source and center, mm-hmm. but the little g gods. You do a lot in help directing and creating the universe and expressing it in many different ways. Many times, never really having to frame it in our image. The problem with the human race is a lot of times we are so vain that we end up constructing all of our things to be in our image versus following the divine guidance and then essentially creating it in our own expression of the divine image or the image of the first source. So one of the basic things that was hinted at was when Abraham, who was taught by Melchizedek, who was a material being of high order origin, a Melchizedek, Machaventa Melchizedek, another, but the original Melchizedek, their plural that came. Mentioned how to build an altar to God, to start to construct a relationship and to take the human from his base mortal relationship to a more divine one. First was to construct an altar, but the important thing was not to cut the stones when you were to pile up and create the altar. They were to retain their natural features. He says, if you cut the stone, you'll defile the stone, because basically we are to reorder what God had already made. And so the altar represents our ability to to contribute in the creation of the universe. And the order not to cut the stone was not, in a sense, to continue the creative process that was started by, you know, the natural creation of the stone would be the how God created the universe. And then in it, in so doing, would have a blend of our contribution into the universe. So that is really, really the ultimate purpose of why we need to attain the divinity.
That's very interesting, the way you told that story.
Yes, because these things are, I'm just retelling what has been told to me. And they come by the same spirits, the same spiritual manifestations that I outlined, you know, whether it be wisdom or knowledge, you know, or faith, or gifts of healing, or working of miracles, powerful acts beyond natural, prophecy, being able to see into the future, or other places, as well as to give forth understanding of you know, even to be able to prophesy would be another word for channeling sometimes too, and also tongues, which would be also a form of channeling. So all of these work by the same spiritual structure. As I said, I function in all of them, so I can see at least the whole and understand where some people's movement into a specialty, you know, would be much like how we, you know, look at specialties in our own ability. Some people will have a specialty because they're better at it, and they choose to be better at it.
Well, it's wonderful to have you explain this to us and pass this on to us.
Yeah, and it's something that you will get if you continue on the path. It's just one warning, is that as you enter into that third, second, and first inner circles, just before entering, especially into the third circle, characteristics of your nature will be put to the test. And those that are serious flaws will be removed. And sometimes they can be removed in different ways. But once they're removed, you know, the beauty of the diamond will glisten forward, you know. It's just that a lot of times you feel it deeply and emotionally. But you've got to come up with, nevertheless, not my will, but the divine will be done. Other, you know, that's the truth. And seeing even those beings who lived in absolutely perfect worlds coming over here and looking at and are in awe of the, not only the confusion, but the creativity that comes about. Because one of the problems with perfection in a world is the loss of liberty. You know, but what we're creating right now is the greater liberty. And one of the factors that the Lucifer rebellion brought about was this greater expansion of what is perfection in the eyes of the first source and the Creator Son himself.
Well, that's beautiful, Michael. I'll have to listen to this again. This is just... I always need to listen to it again. So that's a beautiful thing, the loss of liberty and the greatest expansion. Well, it's past our hour, and Not that we need to end, but maybe this is a good spot. I'm glad you were able to hear that Tom Angels and encourage other people to listen. And let me just say that there's in the electricity for health section on the site, I have four parts to explain it a little bit better. It's all part of natural healing with oxygen and to stay healthy. But when you said living it to eternity, I've heard people say, "Oh, I'm almost tired of eating, not knowing what to eat next." You know, just you know, just getting a little bored with the food.
Yeah.
But it is a beautiful thing to have consciousness and to be
yes.
able to go on and be in this, be part of this universe.
Yeah, and make our contribution, because that's how one of the factors of what we're all about, to make that contribution to the makeup and the uniqueness of our universe, and realize that there are so many sentient beings out there, and billions of them, doing that right now, and many of them being literally in perfect worlds, but then seeing imperfection have its own form of beauty that can be brought into perfection.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Beautiful. Thank you, Michael.
Mm-hmm. Aloha.
Aloha. See you next time. Bye.